It's episode 235. That's 235 of the Kaiju Popcast. Welcome, one and all, to another episode where I am your host, Chad O'Brien. And over there in that corner is Jason.
In the red corner, weighing a certain amount, is me.
And in the other corner is no one. No one. So, Jason Gibson is the sole co-host.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
We'll see. <Yeah. laughs> Just halfway through the episode, he's going to get up and leave.
No, the non-existent other person is going to knock me out in the third round.
Oh, I see. It's going to be one of those where they just run down the ramp with a folded-up chair. And,
yeah.
Although I hear I hear the chairs are out now. Tables are still a big thing.
Yeah. I don't think I could take a table. Probably not.
Falling on a table is actually pretty easy because, I mean, it's all give.
Well, that's true.
It's wood.
I do know how to take a fall.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Honestly, that kind of discussion would be better for Chris to talk about because that's his wheelhouse. But
we're just trying to evoke his spirit.
That's right. That's right. And next week, of course, he will laugh at us for our lack of knowledge, along with telling us all the different types of chairs and which one is best for smacking somebody on the bottom and which one is best for smacking on the head. Personally, I prefer a good wicker chair.
I'd like one made of balsa wood, if balsa at all possible. Wood's
pretty good. Get a rocking chair, because then you can knock them down and then like set it on their back and give them a nice massage as like you sit there with your lemonade in hand. Because as far as I know, there are no longer any rules in the world of professional wrestling once you knock out the referee.
Were there ever really any rules? Because since it's all staged anyways, the rules are whatever you want them to be, right?
How dare you, sir? How dare you? Trying to break the illusion. Wrestling is...
How dare I?
Wrestling continues to be the realest thing there ever was. Certainly more real than... that's right. Or our elected officials.
Yeah,
it's been an interesting week in that world. So let's escape. Let's you and I fly away to a world of video/games.
All right.
The games...
Well, take us there, Chad.
...that have videos within them or are completely comprised of videos. That's what this podcast is all about. Hey, guys. Let's talk about esports. Or as we like to call it here... Jason?
Electronic?
What? No.
Electronic sports?
Wrong. E-spurts, come on.
Yo, e-spurts.
We rehearsed this.
Spurts of E.
That's right, spurts of E. E-spurts are in the news this week because one of the biggest names in competitive gaming, Blizzard, is in the news for trying to form, The league is already formed, the Overwatch League, which is where the pros come and be awesome at Overwatch and do things like get, I don't know, 500-meter kills with Genji with a single shuriken blade or something like that, you know.
As
pros do, something I could never do, of course. But Blizzard... has recently come into the news because of a ridiculous entry fee that they are asking for when it comes to joining this Overwatch League. So apparently not many teams have entered, and there's been a lot of rumor and speculation coming out because of this this entry fee. And it actually originally came out from ESPN. ESPN for those surprised to hear that when it comes to esports, well, they have been jumping into that bucket quite a bit recently, especially when it comes to Counter-Strike and Overwatch. And I'm not sure if they've done MOBAs on ESPN yet. I know those have been televised, but I'm not sure.
I'd be surprised if it wasn't at least in the works.
Mm-hmm. Right. So ESPN came out with this report that apparently Blizzard was asking for $20 million for teams to enter the Overwatch League. And that is quite a lot to ask. Yeah,
that's a good chunk of change.
It's up there, yeah. So, to put this into perspective, the League of Legends, which is still probably the most popular esports game around the world, has its own League Championship Series, which is its most top major league sort of level, and the entry fee to that is a cool $1.8 million, so more than 10 times less than Blizzard is asking for the Overwatch League. And it's important to remember that, you know, even if these teams have people who are famous within their own gaming communities, like, They aren't making this kind of money.
It's not like an NFL team or anything, right, you know, right, where you pay your star players like $10 million a year.
Yep.
That is not happening.
Yep. Now, I mean, you do get corporate sponsorships, and those corporate sponsors might be making quite a bit of money just on, you know, whatever revenue they generate from the popularity of these teams. But of course, not all of it goes to the players themselves. And a lot of the tournament pots, you hear about, every so often a tournament pot will go over $1 million, but like that is the exception and not the norm, which is why you hear about it in the first place. So a lot of these tend to stick around maybe like $100,000.
And you think if the tournament pot's $1 million, yeah, I mean, that has to be split between like the top three placing teams, which then again has to be split between all the players on the team.
And so, of course, the sponsors take a huge cut out of that.
Of course.
That's one thing as well. So along with this $20 million ask fee, there were some pretty hefty fees, in addition, like contractual obligations. For example, teams aren't guaranteed revenue sharing, which means they would make money if Blizzard makes money, until after 2021. Which is
5 years.
Yeah.
That's 5 years.
Well,
wow.
Well, yeah. And the league will take 25% of the transaction if somebody sells their team to another party.
Wow.
Which is also extremely high. Now, so again, this comes from ESPN, and ESPN said that they confirmed this with a number of different sources who were involved in negotiations with various teams. But apparently Blizzard was not happy with all that, and they released a statement kind of negating it, but without actually saying they aren't doing this. So it's a non-denial denial. It's a very long statement. It's a full four paragraphs. I'm just gonna cut out to read some of the most pertinent areas. This is from Blizzard, quote, "We appreciate that there's a lot of enthusiasm about the Overwatch League, which has translated into months of speculation, including reports circulating unverified and wildly ranging rumors from anonymous sources about purported deal terms, team pricing, and other details. We understand the interest in the rumors, and we feel it's important to clarify some things for our community. First, we want to be clear that our ultimate goal is to create an exciting Overwatch esports ecosystem. We're doing our best to take the great care with building this ecosystem. And as with much of what we do, we don't release information until we're at a place where it makes sense to do so. So, they're not going to tell you what they're doing because they're not ready to do it. Second, we'd like to dispel any rumors that we're ignoring endemics. Anyone who knows Blizzard understands how deeply we care about the communities around our games. The league is built upon the best elements of endemic esports programs and traditional sports, and we're in active discussions with many teams and owners from both worlds because it will take a village to stand up a league with such an unprecedented structure. So
basically they're saying pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
That's right. And here we go. Finally, it's important to think twice about statements from unnamed sources who may try to leverage the media to deliberately spread misinformation as bargaining tactics or for other competitive reasons. Now, this one might actually have a bit more leverage or legs.
A little more weight.
Yeah, because first off, they do say that you have to be careful about unnamed sources, but ESPN, I honestly don't know where they stand in honesty as a journalistic kind of outlet, but I would imagine that if they were lying, people would call them out pretty quickly.
Yeah, they're a pretty trusted name in sports news.
Right. So
pretty trusted.
Right. But at the same time, like, I can understand what Blizzard is saying, where basically, if all of this bad publicity comes out, like, Blizzard is asking how much, and they want to put in this kind of condition, and that's ridiculous, and blah, 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 then it might force Blizzard to kind of artificially deflate the value of entering the league, so they might make the cost lower, even though they feel it really kind of deserves more. And, of course, you know, it's the prerogative of any business to get as much money as they can, so...
The thing I see in this is that, like, they're finally trying to... maybe not finally, because I'm not really big into the whole esports scene, but it seems like they're finally trying to make it, like, a real, like, viewer-spectator sport, like, for the masses. You know, like, they're going to make, like, real franchises like they've had for, like, the New England Patriots or the Brooklyn Dodgers or, well, actually, they're LA Dodgers now, but whatever. Like real, like, regular professional sports teams. They're trying to make them, like, household names and stuff like that. And I suppose, like, to do that, you do have to have somewhat of a legitimizing force, which $20 million kind of legitimizes a team.
That is true. Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, do you think the populace, like the general population, is really ready for like that sort of esports league? Like, are you going to see like fathers and sons sitting down on the couch on like Saturday evening and watching the Overwatch semifinals or whatever?
Right. Yeah. And it's like that second point that they were talking about where they're ignoring endemics. This is kind of the point, right? So. In all of these articles, one of them did mention that, New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft apparently has an agreement to purchase one of the teams. And yeah, you get a lot of these, big names suddenly purchasing these teams. But on one hand, it sort of legitimizes it, but on the other hand, it's kind of stepping further and further away from, your kind of Twitch community or whatever kind of fan base you've already built up. That's something. Neither you or I are really experts on esports, so we can't really go too much into it, I guess. But it's something to look for.
Yeah, I mean, like, I really wouldn't mind. Like, if esports became sort of a mainstream thing that people watched, and I'd be cool with that, but I just don't see it really happening in the near future, you know?
Something else that might not be happening in the near future is possibly Hitman Season 2. let's move on to the next story here, where we are talking about Hitman developer IO Interactive, formerly of Square Enix, who has decided that it's time to say bye-bye to IO. IO is pretty much only known for their Hitman series. They also made Kane and Lynch, and I'm forgetting the fighter something, Freedom Fighters. There you go. So IO Interactive, like I said, mainly known for Hitman, and while the series was kind of on the decline for quite a while, the recent seasonal or season pass kind of Hitman game they went with last year with different chapters creating different missions in different areas like Sapienza and Hokkaido and in Japan, things like that. That was really successful, it was really critically successful. Many people talked about how well they pulled this off. Each kind of episode created a number of different situations where you could complete a certain mission. Hitman is obviously a game that lives up to its name. You are an assassin trying to kill a target, and you have to try to do it in a number of different creative ways. Well, just one way, but the fun in Hitman is going back and playing these missions and trying it different ways. Each chapter, you were able to do all sorts of different things. You could snipe your targets, you can poison them, you could make other people kill them, you could just straight up run in and beat the crap out of them, and then of course another major aspect is you have to run away. So yeah, all kinds of different challenges in these games, and the latest one was again a critical darling, pretty much. Everyone loved it, and they looked forward to every new release, but apparently it was not commercially successful. Which I have to wonder if it's more on IO Interactive or
Square. Well, who's the publisher? Square Enix, right?
Square Enix. That's the thing. Is Square Enix is notorious for having some of the most ridiculous expectations when it comes to game sales data. A long time ago, the brand new Tomb Raider game, when that first came out, not number two, but the first one, it sold something like 3.5 million, and that was considered a failure. Resident Evil 6, which was a critical bomb, still sold 5 million, and that was considered a failure. They just have a history of taking these really good sales figures and just going, that's kind of crap. Sega kind of does the same thing with things like Alien Isolation. They said that was a failure, despite selling millions and millions of copies. But,
I don't know how much the production cost of these games were, but if there isn't a certain return on investment, then I don't know. I guess it is a failure.
It's possible, and I don't know. Square Enix certainly isn't hurting. Tomb Raider is still making money for them, as well as, of course, popular games like Final Fantasy.
I suppose when your main cash cow sells like 50 million copies, then you sell something. Oh, that sold 5 million. Screw that thing.
But due to all that, yeah, they've decided to let IO go. IO Interactive is now looking for new parents, I guess. They took to Twitter saying that they are still making games because,
still a studio, right?
Right.
They got shut down.
Exactly. They are a rather large studio. I looked this up about a week ago, but something like 400 employees. They still got to make the money. Still got to pay the people. Keep the lights on. Keep the lights on. Right. So, speaking of making money, though, let's go to Nintendo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because it's that special time in gamers' lives when the leaves are changing and... Wait, no. No, that's later. The snowflakes are... Wait, no.
No.
All right.
No.
E3. That's what it is. Yep. E3 is coming up. In less than a month, we'll have all kinds of new E3 information. Of course, your lovely Kaiju crew will not be attending, but we'll have all the scoops that other people scooped. And we'll talk about those scoops. And it might be the first time you hear about it, so... It's our scoop, right?
There that will be two scoops of raisins. Scoops.
Yep. 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 Well, Nintendo is jumping out the gate. They've said that they've released basically their plans for what they're going to do at E3, and it's not much of a change over their kind of past years. They will not do a full-on press conference. But they will be there, and they'll have, kind of full-on 24-hour, but, like, all-day streams of, Nintendo Spotlight, basically, or their Treehouse live presentations. So, yeah, there will be a number of reveals just throughout the day. I personally kind of hate it because it just kind of trickles out what's coming. Although they will have a kind of a Nintendo Direct style thing starting at June 13th. That's a Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's just sort of kind of becoming the norm, isn't it? For like Sony and Nintendo to just have their own thing. Like they sort of go to E3. But then, like, they have their own little junket, like, separate from it, right?
No. Nintendo does have the Direct, but they don't have, like, live on-stage kind of pressers or anything like that. Now, Sony does have the PlayStation Experience, which, you know, that only started in recent years, but at the same time, that's still not anywhere near the level that they give to E3, because despite the decline of E3 over the past decade or so, it is still like where they want to disseminate the most information to kind of the mainstream media, because you're not going to get ABC or CBS or NBC to cover the PlayStation Experience. It's just too much of a niche kind of thing. But they do show up at E3 and go like, every year, gamers come down to this building. Why is that, Mom and Dad? Because it's E3! And, yeah. Some kind of out-of-touch newscaster, talks about it for a bit. But, so, that's where they get their most mainstream coverage, is E3. Now, yeah, like you said, that is kind of changing because EA, for example, is doing their own thing, separate from E3. They've got I forget what it is, EA Play, EA Live, something like that. But they are also a huge publisher, so they can do that. Whereas some of the others, like Bethesda, they're big, but they've still...
They're not EA big.
Right. So they've still just got to, like, stick to the stage and do that. Which is fine. Yeah. So we'll have those, like I said, less than a month away.
What are you looking forward to, Chad? What do you want to hear?
What am I looking forward to? Well, I do want to see... we'll probably have a more... thawed out E3 predictions episode within the next few weeks. But first off, I want to see what Tango Works is coming up with. So whether that's a sequel to The Evil Within, I believe it is, or something else. I don't know. I want to see progress on Final Fantasy VII Remake. I want to see anything about Red Dead Redemption 2. Still want to see Battlefront 2. I want to see what's going to be included in the single player campaign, Star Wars Battlefront.
Do you think they're going to have any reveals on Fire Emblem Switch?
Well, yeah, for the Nintendo Direct, absolutely. Although I think at E3, kind of like what they did last year, where pretty much their entire booth was devoted to nothing but Zelda Breath of the Wild, I'm pretty sure this year it will be nothing but Super Mario Odyssey with, maybe a Splatoon booth as well. Because they'll be hiking that. So, yeah, I'm still looking forward to it. I would have to look through my notes to really give my full kind of predictions. Yeah. That's pretty much all of the news because E3 is still approaching. So we're going to have a number of leaks and reveals and everything like that in the weeks coming up. We always do.
Okay.
Games.
Yeah. Those things. Things that sometimes we play occasionally.
Yep. We're a month away from hearing about games that are months away. But in the meantime, we have games that we've been playing this week.
We do. We do.
Including one that we both played together. Well,
yes, we
not together, but we both
together.
Played
together. Yep. And I think you finished it, didn't you?
Yes,
I did not.
I can't believe that.
I had no time this week. I had no time. I've had to go to work early, like 3 days this week, and like the baby's getting to the point where he doesn't just go to sleep, and I can just like play video games in the room with him being asleep. So I don't know. I've got to figure something out.
Blame it on the baby.
Everything's the baby's fault. You didn't know that? That's like the one thing you get being a parent. You can just blame everything on the baby.
I'm sure. Make sure to let him know when he grows up. Everything is your fault.
When he acquires language ability, I will be sure to tell him that.
That's right. I'm just surprised because it really is. It's a ridiculously short game. I suppose we should talk about what it is. Little Nightmares. Is a game by Tarsier Studios, which has devs from teams that worked on that. They didn't, do the full development, but they worked on Tearaway and Little Big Planet 3. There's definitely a lot of that kind of design influence in Little Nightmares.
That kind of cutesy, dollish type stuff.
Right. So, yeah. But rather than being full on cutesy, it really veers.
It's dark, man.
Yeah, it's super dark. It veers more towards like, Inside, as we kind of touched on this last week, but it smacks a lot of Inside. It's kind of like being in a Tim Burton movie with some like David Lynch kind of influences.
Yeah, like an R-rated Tim Burton movie.
Right. So not super cutesy like Corpse Ride or the Night Before Christmas. You play as a small child. I don't know, boy or girl.
I think the promotional material said it was a girl.
Okay.
Her name is Six.
Okay. So you play as Six, who is in a yellow raincoat, and she hops around, and she is super tiny. She's like the size of a paint can, something like that. But proportions kind of get like they kind of get
it's kind
up.
Of part of the game, really. The proportions of like characters are a bit off, but yeah, that's like part of the gameplay. So
yeah, so anyway, you are super tiny, especially compared to every other like human-ish thing you find. And I do mean ish when I say
yeah.
That. Like I said, it plays a lot like Inside. It's mostly side scrolling. You do have 3D movement, but
that's more like 2.5D, really.
Yeah. Although I will say it was actually kind of cute because it kind of plays like you're going from room to room, and it kind of plays like basically you are looking through one wall. So one wall is completely glass or something like that. You can come up and jump against it or whatever. But, yeah, so you have no weapons of any kind. You're armed only with a lighter, which is just to light your way, in some dark areas, and also to light various, gas lanterns which are around. But those are just kind of a collectible thing.
They're kind of like save points, I think. Because every time you light one, it like does the little saving icon in the corner. I think it's like a checkpoint.
I think that's more just because it's saving the fact that you got that collectible.
Could be.
Because if you die after getting it, you don't wake up there. You wake up in the standard checkpoint for that room. But that light is still lit, is the thing. Same for, yeah, there's actually a lot of like collectible kind of things in this game. So, there are other little creatures.
Yeah, those little gnomes. Those things scared the crap out of me the first time I saw them.
Yeah, they're not really hostile, but they're not friendly either. They just kind of skitter away when you see them. But a couple will let you walk up to them and you can even give them a little hug. And that's another of the collectibles. And the final one is like a doll that you can throw around, and break it. But, yeah, so you are the little girl, 6, you run from room to room in a kind of oddly laid out structure.
It almost feels like a ship, honestly. I feel like we're on like a boat of some kind.
Yeah, you get that feeling because the actual rooms, they do tilt left and right. So you're either on a ship or, I don't know, just something on the water. And this does play out in, it's never really crucial, but it does play out in a couple of things where, things will roll left and right. For example, there's a kind of puzzle where this, giant mechanical eye is looking over a room. And, and there's a kind of cleaning cart that's rolling back and forth with the room, as it tilts left and right. So you have to hide behind the cart as the eye is scanning the area. Things like that. Now, it does play a lot like Inside, but at the same time, none of the puzzles really ever present a kind of challenge. It's the answer to almost every riddle is pretty clear straight away.
I will say, like, almost the first hard riddle, like, there's a room you could drop out down into, and it's full of, like, tar, and there's a bunch of leeches on the floor. Mm-hmm. And I was stuck in that room for, like, 10 minutes. I kept dying to the leeches, because I'm like, what am I supposed to do? And then I'm like, well, there's a door here, and I'm like, but it's not open, so I just, like, kind of didn't think about it. And then I just didn't know what to do, so I'm like, screw this. So I ran to the door. It turns out you just push the door down. Push it down. Yeah. I'm like, what? Ah. But that is kind of, I do kind of like that about it, though. It's really not hand-holdy at all.
Right. Yeah, there's almost none of that. And it does have some nice surprises in it. So honestly, I would say in terms of visuals, I actually appreciate this game a lot more than Inside. Inside's design was just a bit bland for me. Everything looked a bit too blocky. which is fine, but
well, I mean, that was the design aesthetic they were going
exactly
for, though,
but
right?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I prefer this design aesthetic. So, but in terms of like the overall kind of game experience, I'm still going to give it to Inside. Especially like without giving too much away, there's some stuff at the end that kind of just made me go like, what? Really? That? Okay.
You mean in Little Nightmares?
Right. In Little Nightmares.
Okay.
Yeah, the ending of Inside was like, it
was a what, but it was a different what. It was a what?
Yes. What versus what? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's that game. So, still highly recommended. It's a fun experience, and I still don't understand how you didn't complete it. It's sub 4 hours.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't have 4 hours. Sorry, man.
Fine. 4 hours. Just, toss out the baby for a bit.
Just throw him out the window. It's raining. Go play in the water.
There you go. Right. He's got to learn to fend for himself at some point.
He does like playing in water. It is true.
Tell him, did you ever play Tokyo Jungle? And then toss him out.
Tokyo Godfathers, here you go.
Wow, that's a... Wow. Completely different message there, but alright. Yeah, so I'm guessing that's the only thing you had time to touch upon this week? Yeah.
Yeah, the only new thing I played this week was that.
Okay, so I'll go on with my second then. A game I've put in quite a lot of time into, but still have no idea, like, how far I am, is Prey. So let me preface this entire discussion by saying I never played the first Prey. I don't even know what the game was about. I don't know where you were. I don't know who you were. I don't know what the enemies were.
Yeah, but I never played it either, but it got pretty good reviews.
Exactly.
I do know that.
I mean, it got good reviews, and moreover than, I mean, you know, plenty of games get good reviews, but this was, like, even today, people still talk about the original Prey. They're like, you haven't played it? Like, what's wrong with you? That kind of thing. What's wrong with me is I don't have any kind of system that can actually play it, or I don't know where to get it. Right. So, Prey. Done by, published by Bethesda and developed by Arkane Studios. This is, I'm not sure what they're branding it as. It's not a sequel. I think it's just a complete reboot. Might be.
That was my understanding, was that it was a complete reboot.
Right. You play as, Morgan Yu. The name is ambiguous enough, Morgan, that you can play as either male Morgan or female Morgan. You are a world-renowned scientist, aboard Talos One, which is a kind of orbital science research lab, excuse me, run by this company called Transtar, and they are doing, research into this hostile alien life form called a Typhon. And of course, as these things do, the Typhon breaks out and, causes all kinds of terrible things to happen aboard Talos One. And you, being the genius scientist that you are, decide to get your gravity gun and go to Zan. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. That's another
genius. Wrong game.
Yep.
Wrong game.
But I will say, yeah, this game does feel a lot like a new Half-Life, which, you know, it's not a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination. So, yeah, you are the scientist. You go around, you collect, all kinds of interesting little weapons. You solve puzzles, you get new powers, yeah, it's not really a shooter, in that, you don't have an infinite amount of ammo or anything like that. Ammo is not just all over the place, where you can pick it up and, you know, continue blasting everything in your face. In fact, for a long time, the only weapons I had were, a wrench, a silenced pistol, which did fuck all for damage, and a weapon called a glue gun, a G-L-O-O gun. I forget what it stands for, but, the glue gun is actually really fun, in that, it shoots out a small little pellet that kind of, it's expanding foam, right? So it expands and hardens, and it's used for all kinds of different things. So if you fire it at the enemies, this is important because like the Typhon are kind of like, they're kind of like Venom from Spider-Man.
Symbiotes?
Yeah. I mean, they don't, you know, they don't, wrap around. It's kind of like the symbiotes without a host.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, just like these little black squiggly things that run around, the most common one that you'll see is the Mimic, and, like, C is kind of in quotes there, because, they mimic other objects in whatever room they're in, which is terrifying, because you'll come into a room, and of course, like, the Typhon have been ravaging this entire space station, so people have been going nuts, and they're, you know, things are knocked over, and, nothing's in order. So, you see a lot of chairs, like, kind of scattered on the ground, and you're like, okay. And then you walk a little bit into the room, and one of those chairs turns into a frickin', like, it's a black head crab. It leaps around, it's super fast, it jumps at you, it slashes you, it does all kinds of damage. So you have to hit it with your glue gun, which basically hardens it in whatever form it is. And then you pull out your wrench and deliver a killing blow. That works remarkably well for mimics, although it is kind of funny because, like I said, they dance around a lot. A lot of these enemies do, actually. They're really, really fast. So there are a lot of missed glue gun shots. So by the end of a fight with just a mimic, I'll see balls of, you know, hardened foam everywhere. Mm-hmm. It also works on the larger enemies. So some of them do have like a humanoid shape, even if they're not, there's not a human underneath, anything like that. Now it does work on them, but for a much shorter period of time. So basically you have to harden them, smack them a couple of times, hope that you hit them hard enough that they kind of like fall down. And then get back to your glue gun before they get back up and repeat the process. You also have to deal with a lot of machines that were on the station that got, of course, corrupted. And so now they want to kill you. You also have to deal with, psychopathic humans who want to kill you. It's amazing how many people want to kill you despite the fact that you're basically the boss. Oh, wait. That might be why.
Ah.
Revelations. Aha. Epiphanies. Right. So, yeah, this is what happens when you experiment with, hostile alien life forms that are black ooze. Like I said, I've been playing for several hours. I'm about 20 hours in, and it's a game that it doesn't really have like a defined genre. So Arkane Studios is more well known for Dishonored, which has kind of these loosely structured objective kind of games with it's kind of like small open worlds. And that's kind of what goes on here. You are given free range of the entire station. Some doors are locked and things like that, but you can find key cards that will open them even without completing like main objectives. You'll just you'll find them. You know, you explore the security office and you'll find this guy in a holding cell who has this card that leads to the visitor center. So you go to the visitor center and there's a new item or something like that. It kind of lets you explore on your own. But one thing I really do like is that, life on Talos 1 is it's just a research and development kind of lab office experience. So you get to check everybody's email, and
snooping. Yeah.
And I mean, it's just like the most mundane kind of stuff, right? It's like, hey, you know, why don't we meet up in the rec room and play some D&D? And like, yeah, there are these characters that actually play D&D. And some other guys, they got bored, so they created, using like this 3D printer kind of thing, they created a Nerf crossbow to have like little, you know, office combat. And it turns out, like, the crossbow is actually useful because, they made the darts capacitive touch. So you can shoot the crossbow and, let's say you're behind a locked door, a gate. You can smash the window, but maybe there are still bars. You can shoot through the bars at the computer that says, like, you know, release doors, like, hit that button and then bloop. Okay. The doors are open now. But at the same time, like, it still does have this play your own way kind of thing, because there are other ways to get around that. There are these neuromods, which you basically shove something into your eye, and now you have a new power, like increased strength or something. So the increased strength skill allows you to pick up, like, heavy objects that are blocking doors. Or you can, you eventually get the ability to craft like your own neuromods, from the aliens.
Okay.
Which allows you to do things like I mean, this isn't really much of a spoiler. This has been known for a long time. You can do things like you can become a mimic yourself. You don't become like the head crab, but like you can become a coffee cup, a moving coffee cup. And so you can slip through small cracks, in gates and stuff like that. Yeah, there's all this stuff you can do, and it's a lot of fun, but at the same time, like, I don't know how far I am because I'm just doing all kinds of weird stuff. I find, like, I'll find an email that says, oh, yeah, you know, those neuromods you've been wanting? Well, actually, I sent them to this department by mistake, so you'll have to talk to this person. That kind of leads me on a quest because you can go to a security station and it will have, like, a list of employees. You can select that employee and it will create a new waypoint for you to find that person. So, oh yeah, I gave this item to that person, go ask her. I'm like, okay, so I find her on the list, I go, and it turns out, of course, you know, she's dead, she's being watched by a phantom. And so I had to take care of the phantom, but then I get some kind of reward. Yeah, there's a whole lot of that kind of thing going on. So I think I've only completed like three main objectives. But, yeah, it's fun. Although I will say it's it's an exceptionally challenging game because of what I said earlier, where I only have like the three weapons and the enemies can hit you hard. I eventually did get one more weapon. I got a shotgun. But of course it's the typical shotgun thing where, ammo is super scarce. So, it's kind of encouraging you not to engage in combat, which, you know, I like. There are numerous ways to sneak around certain enemies. But at the same time, one thing I don't like is that enemies will respawn when you go from like one area and then come back. Not every enemy.
What year is this?
2017. Like I said, not every enemy will respawn, but you'll come back and there'll be like a new phantom or new mimics have popped up, and so you come back from like this important mission, and then you have to go through familiar areas, but you have to be on guard again, and that's I don't really like that. But yeah, still very interesting. Excited to see where it goes. And that is that.
Yeah, I mean, sounds good. I would love to have the time to play it.
Right. Well, that's all the games we're going to talk about this week. That's all we played. So, you have to look forward to other games that are coming out next week.
Lay it on us, Chad.
Right. So, we have a brand new game coming to the PlayStation VR, and that is Farpoint. PlayStation or Sony is really hyping this one. I would love to play it, but I can't find a Move controller for the life of me. They are available in the States, but nowhere in Japan. So get on that, Sony, please. I would like to play your game. Other games, we have Injustice 2. So that's the sequel to Injustice where, but now you get like gear that apparently affects your stats, like better strength or better defense. And apparently that's going to be allowed in online play. So that'll be interesting to see how that works out. Operation Babel, New Tokyo Legacy gets a Western release for PC and Vita. The Surge, which is, I always get these games mixed up. Made by the developer of Shadows of the Fallen or Bound by Flame. I forget which one. Deck 13. What did Deck 13
mean? I don't know.
Lords of the Fallen. That's it.
Not Shadows. Yeah. Oh, yeah, The Surge. That's like the mecha future Dark Souls, right?
Right, yeah. So you cut off body parts and you attach them to yourself.
Right.
So there's that. PC gets Bokita Heartfelt Reunion. I have no clue what that is. Nintendo Switch gets Thumper, which is great. You should pick that up. The 3DS gets the Western release of Fire Emblem Echoes, Shadows of Valentia. We talked about this before. That is the remake of Fire Emblem Gaiden, which is the second Fire Emblem game ever. So prepare for a lot of differences if you're used to Awakening and Fates. For PS4, Xbox One, and PC, we have Skylar and Plux, Adventure on Clover Island. And let's see. All the rest of these will be for Sony stuff, but Arcade Classics Archive, Neo Geo Overtop, Akiba's Beat for PS4 and Vita, Baila Latino for PS4, which is a Latin dance game, Black and White Bushido for PS4. It describes itself as a 4-player stealth-em-up arena brawl.
Stealth-em-up?
Right. Choose what? Between the light and the shadow in 3 challenging game modes. Hide with camouflage, throw shurikens, and drop smoke bombs to beat your friends locally or online.
Okay.
Yep. Demo, The Last Recital, coming to PS Vita. That is a super hard music game that requires like 12 fingers to complete. Farpoint, as I said. Future Unfolding for PS4, action-adventure game. Oceanhorn, Monster of Uncharted Seas, comes to PS Vita. I think it's already out for PS4. It's a Zelda ripoff. Unquestionably a Zelda ripoff. Unapologetically. Right. Seasons After Fall, coming to PS4. That's a kind of puzzle platformer where you can shift the seasons around to make the platforms do different things. Shadow Warrior 2, coming to PS4. Shadow Warrior is a famous game, so I don't need to describe it. Tango Fiesta is an action-packed top-down shooter for 1-4 players. Right. And that is going to do it for this week. But if you're interested in what we have to say about games, be it videos or reviews or anything like that, hop on over to our website at kaijupop.com. You can follow us on social media. We are at YouTube, so youtube.com/kaijupop, or Twitter at kaijupop. And you can follow us personally. I am at Kyoshi Banzai.
I am at Gibsaurus.
And of course, we want to thank you guys for always liking, subscribing, commenting, doing whatever, all that good stuff to our videos and podcasts. So thank you very much, guys. And we'll catch you another time. Goodbye.
See you.